time to thrive. Welcome to the Thriveology Podcast with Dr. Lee Bockham. Join us as we explore ways that you can thrive in your life, regardless of what life throws at you. It's your life. Time to live it.
Hi, this is Lee Bockham. I'm a full-time thriveologist and part-time thriver. The reason I say that is because I have been studying how people thrive and ways that people can thrive for decades now, and sometimes I even manage to apply them to my own life, not as often as I would like, but that's certainly what I strive for, is to find more ways to thrive in my life, and I'm here to help you do the same. I'm here for us to walk down this journey of learning to thrive, and so today I want to talk a little bit about something that is a very important, in my mind, one of the most important topics when we think about how to thrive. And so first I want to ask you a simple question. What is it that somebody could do that would make them unforgivable? What are actions in your mind for which somebody cannot and should not be forgiven? What do you come up with? Because I've done this as part of a series on forgiveness, and I'll tell you what I noticed. People came up with some very heinous things that could be done. They talked about injury to children and abuse of children, and they talked about mass killings, and they talk about people who just really did horrible things to other people. You know, they were con artists that took advantage of lots and lots of people. And so they came up with all of these reasons why somebody could not be forgiven. And as they went through, I would just ask, is that a place, can you kind of resonate with that and say, absolutely, that person does not deserve to be forgiven? Can you think about, for instance, somebody who might go into a school and injure children that are completely innocent, or a terrorist who would go in and destroy a building that has completely innocent people in it, or somebody who does such horrible, horrendous things to the economy or to children, or somewhere that you go, wow, that's the one. That cannot be forgiven. Here's why I ask. If you can come up with some reasons why something is unforgivable, then you have created a paradigm in your mind that there are some things for which you should not forgive. And I want to propose that there are actually two paradigms of forgiveness. The first one is that forgiveness is something you do for that other person. And so if they do something so bad they don't deserve it, then you would withhold forgiveness. So the first paradigm is for the other person. But let me propose that the real paradigm is that we forgive for ourselves, that we forgive so that we are not constantly carrying around those pains and those incidences and those stuck places in our lives, so that we're not lugging them around. So I kind of think of life in the paradigm where you're not going to forgive, as being like, you know, there's an injury that happens to you, and you take that injury and you stick it into your backpack, and you walk around with it, and then something else happens and you stick that in, and pretty soon that backpack begins to weigh you down, begins to cut into your shoulders and into your hips. And pretty soon what you find is life has slowed down and you can't keep up with life, and you don't want to be around other people because, you know, they might just add more to your burden. And for me, that's the painful part. If you don't know, for almost 25 years, I've been working in the office as a therapist. And part of what I've worked to do is help people learn to thrive in their lives in that setting. But what I realized was many people could not find a way of thriving because they would latch on to some event somewhere in their life and refuse to let go of it. They would hold on to it and let that event and let that person define them. I had many people who would tell me stories of having been abused as children, and they held on to those pains as if they had just happened. Or they had been betrayed by a lover, and they held on to that incident as if that became their defining point. And it never ceased to amaze me how many people would come in with the definition of themselves as being the victim. Now, it's not that there are not things that happen that cause pain. I don't want to downplay that. Many people say, oh, so you're saying that nothing should hurt me. No. There are plenty of things in life that will hurt and cause pain. The question is what happens after that, not if something will happen. Those are inevitable. People will betray us. People will hurt us. Life will knock us down. But then the question becomes, what do you do next? How do you step beyond that and find something else? And that's for me, is the question about forgiveness. It's not, will something happen? It is, what do I do after that fact? For a number of years, I saw a woman who had been left in a very painful divorce about 30 years ago now. I saw her for years and years, and you would have imagined that betrayal, that divorce had happened just a couple of years back. The first time I met her, she was telling me her story, and I finally said, how long ago was this? And I had no idea it had been 15 years. She still carried around every ounce of the pain from those events. She almost nurtured them, almost nurtured that story of pain and hurt. And at one point I said, what would it take for you to forgive this person? To which she responded in a way that we all can make sense. I will not let him off the hook. I will not forget what he has done to me. I will not let him go. The interesting thing is the person who left her had remarried, had parented new children, and had moved on with his life, and I think was largely unaware of the fact that he had left this person in so much pain. I don't know. He might have known the pain that he had caused, but he certainly didn't care about it. It certainly didn't affect him. And what I realized in that moment is the forgiveness had nothing to do with him and everything to do with her. But here's the problem. We carry around this brain in our heads that's built to protect us, that's built to look for threats. And so part of what happens is that when our brain is built that way and we have this whole idea of how to forgive, it gets all mucked up in our survival instincts. You see, our brain plays a trick on us. It convinces us that we need to remember, and not just remember, but hold on to those places of pain, because those places of pain can be ways of avoiding it in the future. That's what our brain tells us. That's not what happens. Because when we're set up in our brain to scan the world for threats, it's looking for generalized threats. And what we do is we specify it to a particular person and we hold on to the pain from that event. And so then we get confused in what forgiveness is about, and we think that forgiveness and forgetting are the same thing. And I want to just say that when I'm talking about forgiving, what I'm talking about is letting go of the pain. Sometimes I think that perhaps that term gets us in trouble because we're raised in a culture that talks about how you have to forgive. You know, it's kind of a spiritual mandate that you have to forgive, instead of us realizing that the spiritual mandate is for ourselves. It ends up being something that we have come to believe that we have to forgive begrudgingly. I think back on my earliest experiences of having to forgive. And I think back on experiences with my older brother. My older brother is 18 months older than I, and we tended to be little bear cubs and often got into scrapes, often enough that I remember sometimes my father holding both of us by the shoulders, making us face each other and apologize and accept the apology. So, you know, we look at each other and he would make us say, oh, I'm sorry. And the other would say, oh, it's okay, I forgive you. And then we would reverse it. There was no heart of forgiveness in that. It was an act almost of us feeling like we were pressured to do that and making it about the other person instead of, oh, gosh, you know, I could let go of this pain and I could really let go of the fact that you hurt me. So I think we're often raised in that culture where the expectation is that we will forgive to let that other person somehow back into our lives or off the hook or something else. And I want to define today that that's not what forgiveness is about. Forgiveness is letting go of the pain. Now, the pain will stay around, so it's not getting rid of the pain. It's about letting go of the pain. Pain tends to stay until it heals. And as it heals, it moves away. So what often happens is something happens. Somebody does something and we're hurt by it. Whether they intended to or not is irrelevant to the point that we are hurt by it. That hurt becomes anger. Anger is that outward expression of our inner hurt. And so when we get hurt and that turns to anger, if that anger is not processed, it becomes resentment. That resentment, if it's allowed to build, begins to be disdain for the other person. And we make them other than human, less than human, or worse than human. And we get caught in a cycle where we don't want to let go of that because we put that person into a way of thinking, how evil they are, how psychopathic they are, how whatever, and we keep them locked in that role. And then we are playing the role of victim at that moment. So if you think of it kind of like a physical injury to your body, you know, if you're walking around and you walk into something and it hurts you and it cuts you, the hurt is that initial wounding. The anger is kind of what happens to the bodily response where it turns red and maybe swells up. And that's the outward expression you can see of that injury. If that anger turns to infection, that's the resentment, becomes systemic. And if it builds up long enough, it poisons the entire system. And so it's the same process when something happens that hurts us psychically, when it hurts us psychologically. So not forgiving leaves us as the victim in the story. I would just propose that there are other options. We all have responsibility, and I always need to define what this means because people say, I'm not responsible for somebody hurting me. That is correct. Responsibility, though, by the word, is the ability to respond. We all have an ability to respond to whatever happened to us. We can, in some ways, choose how we will respond. We will either respond as victim or we will respond as healed, right? And we will move towards a healing place. And so we all have responsibility. We will respond. It's not a choice. All of us have some response. So when we don't forgive, we're blaming the other person. And that keeps us stuck in the role of victim. When we blame ourselves, which is also a place of forgiveness, can we forgive ourselves for the places that we've missed the point or not done what we should have or whatever else that we might hold on to for ourselves? And when we blame the self, we keep us as stuck as less than, of undeserving, of, by the way, being a victim. So blaming others and blaming the self both lead to us being a victim. Forgiveness is about letting go of that because we move from seeing the other person as enemy to seeing the other person with empathy. Empathy is understanding that the other person is not your true enemy and understanding that people act to help themselves and not primarily to hurt others, and that's with rare exception. There are some people who are psychopaths who really are just out to cause pain to other people. They're still doing it because of their own inner hurt, their own inner psyche. And so building empathy is being able to say, that person hurt me, but that wasn't their primary intention. We often assume malicious intent rather than seeing the other person as human with human foibles. There is a term in social psychology, the attribution error. And the attribution error is that when somebody does something wrong, I will see that person as having a character flaw, that there is something wrong to the core. But if I do that same thing wrong, I will see it as a mistake, an accident. So what you do wrong, that tells me that there's something deeply wrong with you. What I do wrong, I simply see as a misjudgment, a bad day, a mistake. That's the attribution error, and we all make it. When we begin to understand, and one of the core beliefs I have, we understand that other people are doing the best they can from where they are. The best they can from where they are. Now, that's not optimal performance. I'm not saying that people are always doing the best that they are capable of, but that in that moment, they're doing the best they can where they are. So we can move from enemy to empathy just by accepting that humans make mistakes. And suddenly that person that we've made into something other than human and other than that human foible, we make that attribution error. We can begin to say, wow, even though I may not understand what was going on, something was going on for them. Sometimes people make the mistake of assuming that they have to figure out what it was that was driving the other person. They spend a lot of time going, oh, what was it that would lead them to think that way? And I just encourage people to say, I can have empathy even if I don't understand what it was. I can understand that that is just human nature. So a lot of times at this point, I've had people say, okay, I understand I need to forgive, but I don't know how. So let me tell you what I consider to be the 6 steps to arriving at forgiveness. These are 6 steps that you can do internally. And you'll notice that these 6 steps require nothing from the other person. And this is very important. This is not about reconnecting with that other person. We're going to talk about that in just a minute. So stick with me through the steps. Step number 1 is seeing the other person as human. That's applying the attribution error and saying, okay, I make mistakes. The other person makes mistakes. Mistakes is not the same as malicious intent. And so I'm going to see the other person as human. And it doesn't matter if they were a parent and you put them up on a pedestal, or a lover and you put them up on a pedestal, or a sibling and you put them up on a pedestal, or anyone else. They are still human, capable of making mistakes that are usually coming out of their own need for something, right? That's coming out of their own place of pain or of making some error. And so the step number 1 is simply agreeing to see that other person as human, as a broken human. One of the things I often find interesting when we have stories in the news about somebody who has done something horrible, the first thing that comes out is the image of that person as monster. And the press will build that image up of how horrible they were and how they had planned all this and how evil they were. Now, I'm not taking away from the fact they may have been premeditated and they may have done some horrible things. But what follows is suddenly realizing that that person has a history, that some reason they were acting out of their own injury. What they were really acting out of was the fact that they were not able to forgive some people, some person, for some past injury. Now, I want us to really think about that. When we decide that I cannot forgive that, it will come out in destructive ways in our lives. Maybe not as destructive as those people have been, but we will either destroy other people or destroy ourselves. That's what happens when that energy is shoved back behind us into the backpack. I remember when I was at a workshop and we were listing these things about what were unforgivable. And when we talked through it, everybody kind of arrived at the conclusion that everything could be forgiven because that's a way of saying, I am not going to carry this forward. And then somebody told a story. And it was a woman who had been married to a very abusive man. And she told the story about that abuse. And everybody suddenly said, you should not forgive him. You can't forgive that man. To which I helped them see that they had just dropped back to the same old pattern that we so easily get pulled into. That they made that person evil. And the best moment in that was when the person said, wait, I have to forgive that person so I don't have to keep carrying this around. I'm realizing I'm the one who is being injured by this, not him. He's in jail somewhere else and he's doing what has to be done because of what he did. But I keep carrying it around. And so we point back to that place of seeing paradigm 1, people do things and you should not forgive them. Paradigm 2, you can forgive and let go so that you don't carry it around. So the first step is seeing the other person as human, of coming from their own place of pain and from their own place of unforgiveness, and recognizing that whatever they did to you was not likely aimed maliciously at you, but it was about something within them. So then step 2 is very easy. It's deciding to forgive. Not forgiving, but deciding to forgive. Deciding you can let go of that. This is about reclaiming your personal power. If you cannot forgive something, you have given up control while pretending that you are in control. Let me say that again. If you cannot forgive, you have given up your own place of control, but you're pretending that you are in control, that you're pretending to hold on to that as somehow that gives you control. But what it really is doing is controlling you. So deciding to forgive is saying, I'm going to take back my personal power and I'm not going to carry this around with me. I'm going to let this go. Okay, so step 2 is just deciding to forgive. It's a line in the sand. It doesn't mean the process of forgiveness has happened. It just means that the decision has been made to forgive. Step three is to breathe through the memories and let them pass. There's no need to process or pick apart those memories and try to figure out who did what and why they did it and what was your reason and what was your motivation, what was their reason, what was their motivation. That only keeps us stuck in it, but breathing through the memories as they come and letting them pass. Imagine watching those memories as if they were leaves on the country stream floating away as you're breathing. Now let's talk about the breathing. The breathing that I'm suggesting is truly breathing. I'm not using that as a metaphor. It's truly breathing, belly breathing. When you find yourself caught up in these memories, what you'll notice is there is a bodily reaction. Your body tenses up. Your body is holding on to the poison in the way it acts. It acts as if you are in that moment under attack. That's the interesting thing about memories. They act as if our mind makes our body act as if it's happening right then. Have you ever been sitting there and reimagining something scary or something awful and noticing the rush of adrenaline through your body and noticing your heart beating and your perspiration and your body clenching? If you haven't, you want to become aware of that and practice a new breathing technique. If you don't know about belly breathing, we're going to talk about it very briefly. We'll talk about how to do that belly breathing and what that does for you. Okay, so belly breathing is what people learn when they're doing martial arts or when they take singing lessons or maybe yoga class or meditation class. Belly breathing comes from the deepest parts of your diaphragm. And so the easiest way to learn how to do this is to lie down on a couch or on a bed or on the floor and put a hand over your breastbone and a hand over your belly button and work to breathe so that the only hand that moves is over your belly button. That would be breathing through your belly, belly breathing. And so you, it's a slow process of breathing in and out. So, you know, count of three or four, both in and out. And the reason this is important is because our brain is wired into very primitive mechanisms that's always preparing us to fight. And so when we have a memory, a thought about something that feels threatening, we go into that fight mode. Our body gets ready and it tenses up and it puts adrenaline into our system and it reinforces the thoughts that we're having. It builds in the feedback of having that thought again and again. And so we want to try not to have more of those thoughts. We want to try not to be caught up in those thoughts. And so belly breathing can help our body know that it's not a threat. And so when that memory comes to you and you notice your body tensing up, simply put a hand on your belly button and belly breathe and let that thought pass. And one easy way of doing that is to just count the breaths. Another way of doing it is imagine a stop sign and to mentally, not out loud, but mentally say stop. To try to disrupt that thought process, to try to disrupt that memory recollection. Because all you're doing is bringing a past memory into the present and your body treats it as if it's happening right now. So step number three is to breathe through the memories that will come. Understand that forgiveness is not forgetting, but breathe through those memories and just let them pass. There is no need to try to figure them out. There is no need to try to decide why they popped up at that moment. The fact is they did, and that's all you need to understand. They did, and you can let them go. Okay, number four. Step four is to accept the lessons from the incident, but allow the hurt to evaporate. Sometimes we have to look and say, why would I continually be attracted to these people who are going to hurt me? That's a lesson to be learned. Sometimes we can learn a lesson by saying, I don't want to be like that other person. But there is always a lesson to be learned. And one of the things that I truly believe about thriving is the people who will thrive are the ones who choose to learn from what happens and grow from it. And so to be able to accept the lesson, that there is a lesson somehow, and still allow the hurt to be separate from that. I can learn from something without being pulled into the hurt of that. And one of the lessons you don't want to learn is, you know, I can't love anyone. And that's sometimes what people take from that is they say, oh, that person injured me. So the lesson to learn is don't let someone in. That's not the lesson. The lesson may be I need to be selective of who I let into my life. I may need to allow the right people into my life. And I need to learn from this incident of who the wrong people are. That's an important lesson, but I can't be loved. I'm not lovable. I shouldn't love. Any lesson that feels like that is not the lesson. You need to dig one step further. That lesson is still based in being a victim. So pull from that and look for the lesson that you can learn that will allow you to grow and learn from that and move beyond it. Step number 5 is to accept your role and use that as a point of potential change and growth. And this is a tough one. For instance, my client who was divorced had to accept the fact that she allowed that relationship to disconnect. She also had to accept the fact that she stayed in the relationship and tried to keep it going long after it should have ended based on how he was going. She had to accept the fact that she had kept blinders on for a long time in that relationship. Now, I say she had to. She'd never got to the point where she did accept that, but that would have been the place for her to accept her role. We all have roles in life, and one of the places that when we play victim, we say, I didn't have anything to do with that. We miss the fact that we often, not always, but we often have some role in what happens to us, either in the event itself or how we've held on to it over the years. Now, this is not to me to say you caused those bad things to happen, but to say that we all have a role in either how we got to that point or what we do after that. That is our ability to respond that we're then pulling on. So accepting our role and use that as a potential point of change and growth to say, how do I move beyond this? Be careful not to move to blaming yourself, but simply looking for what do I need to learn about myself in this? What do I need to learn from where I was in that so that I'm a better person, that I'm growing, and that I'm thriving? Step number 6 is to reinforce your choice to forgive, because it's going to come back to you over and over. This is a process, not a moment in time, but a process, which brings us to saying, do you need to set some new boundaries in your life? Do you need to set some ways of protecting yourself from that person or from people like that who might mistreat you, might take advantage of you because you allow yourself in that situation? That's a boundary. A boundary is what you will not let someone do to you, how you will not let someone talk to you or treat you. And that's something that we're going to cover in detail in future podcasts. But just know that a boundary is a way you protect yourself. Now, I want to talk about a couple of things that forgiveness is not about. Forgiveness and reconciliation are not the same. You can choose to forgive, but choose not to reconnect with that person. I've had many people come in my office who have been deeply wounded by a family member. And when we work on forgiveness, they say, but does that mean I have to go hang out with them? Absolutely not. You may decide not to have any connection with that other person, but you may decide that you're not going to carry around that pain, that you're not going to carry it around. You're going to forgive, and you're going to leave them at a distance. One example of thinking through this is, if you remember, Pope John Paul was shot. And shortly after he recovered from being shot, he went to the prison to forget the person who shot him. He went to offer his, and to forgive, not just offer, but to forgive that person who had done him great damage. But at the end of that meeting, the Pope left and the shooter stayed in jail. Reconciliation in any way of them having any relationship was simply not going to happen. The Pope forgave, but that did not mean that they were going to be friends and leave together. That did not take the person off the hook. There are times when people have to be held responsible for their actions, but that's separate from forgiveness, which brings me to forgiveness and reconciliation not being the same, but also forgiveness and retribution are not related. Not forgiving keeps you stuck and does nothing to the other person. Justice occurs externally to you and to the forgiveness process. But notice that when you hold a grudge, it only imprisons you, not the other person. Holding a grudge is not about somehow making the other person be accountable. All it does is it keeps you one more layer of weight and heaviness on you that keeps you from moving forward. Okay, so those are the 6 steps, and those are some differentials. Step 1, see the other person as human. Step 2, decide to forgive. That's a decision. Step three is to breathe through those memories and let them pass. Step four is to accept the lessons from the incident, but separate them and allow the pain to evaporate. Step number five is to accept your role and use that as a point of potential change or growth. And then step number six is to reinforce your choice to forgive and perhaps create some boundaries to protect yourself. Again, forgiveness and reconciliation are not the same. Just because you forgive does not mean you have to have a relationship with that person. Forgiveness and retribution are not related. Whatever needs to happen to them is external to that process. Justice and forgiveness are two different pieces. Also, just to kind of knock it in the head, forgiveness is not about forgetting. It is about remembering differently. It is about viewing that other person differently, but it's not about forgetting. So let me raise a question for you. If you will not forgive something, why won't you? What is your fear of forgiving? And what will you give up if you do forgive? What's threatened in your self-understanding or your understanding of the other person if you choose to forgive? If you can answer those, I think you're going to arrive at the point where you realize that your forgiveness is so that you go forward free and thriving. Okay, thanks for listening through to this. I hope that it's been helpful to you. I'd love to hear what you think about that. You can leave comments if you're on the blog. The blog is at thriveology.com if you are listening by iTunes. And you can get there and just leave a comment. Let us know what you think. Also, if you have some ideas that you would like to hear about, if you have some things that you think we should cover, you could just email me at podcast@thriveology.com. That's podcast@thriveology.com. And by the way, Thriveology is T-H-R-I-V-E. OLOGY.com, Thriveology.com. And what would be really helpful is if you're not at your computer right now, when you do get back, if you could just find us in the iTunes store, if you listen by iTunes, and just give us a rating. That really helps us. And also one other thing, if you're on Twitter, a quick way of helping us is just going to your browser and typing in Thriveology.com/love. That's Thriveology.com/love. And what it's going to do is throw in a tweet for you to send out and let people know about this. And you can change that message or you can just hit send. Very simple way of helping us and showing us a little love. So that's Thriveology.com/love. I wish you the best. This is Lee Balcom wishing you the best in your thriving life.
Listening to the Thriveology podcast. Thank you for listening. If you want more information, visit us at thriveology.com or at thriveologymagazine.com. Remember that Thriveology is spelled T-H-R-I-V-E-O-L-O-G-Y. It's your life. Time to live it.